things I've taken most powerfully from your work is the fact that a defeated left can be a dangerous thing. The story you've just described, where the new left and second wave feminism specifically didn't pursue that, you know, demand for a transition to something totally different after the failure of post-war state-managed capitalism, and ended up instead getting in bed with an even more exploitative, arguably, form of capitalism with neoliberalism. We're in a very similar moment now, but with a defeated left, a very fast-changing and fast-moving situation where a lot of elites with a lot of different kind of political orientations are suddenly speaking our language. You warned about what happened last time with that. I'm always recommending Fortunes of Feminism as a sort of warning about the left in the present and how attentive we need to be to how our ideas and frames of feeling kind of get used by others in moments of defeat. I wonder if you could say something about your own relationship to feminism. I mean, first off, you are, like, what is best in your work, there is a direct line back to the best socialist feminism written in the 1960s. Juliet Mitchell, to you, I don't know if you agree with that comparison, I just see a methodological consistency. At the same time, Fortunes of Feminism and the critique you just gave of the transition to neoliberalism and feminism's little role in it, that's absolutely devastating as a critique. There's similar stuff in here when you talk about the way that in the 19th century, family and society was conceptualized as a sort of bulwark against the you know, traumatic force of economy and capitalism. And so it could sometimes feel like feminists who are arguing for less conservative gender roles could seem like they were siding even then with economy over society. So I wonder if you sort of carry that sort of mixed feelings about your own tradition with you throughout your work.
I think I would say first of all that that feminism for me is a field of argument, like all social movements, and it has what we used to call bourgeois currents or liberal currents or even neoliberal currents, as well as socialist currents, and everything in between. In a country like the U.S., the liberal currents became hegemonic as the new left waned. And this is always the case in the United States. This liberal traditions, liberal individualism is very strong. It's only in rather exceptional moments of deep crisis and of political radicalization responding to that crisis, such as the 1930s, such as the 1960s. It's only in moments like that significant social movements think structurally and incline themselves to anti-capitalism or anti-imperialism. This was the case in the 30s, surely, and then devolves into liberal anti-communism by the 1950s, with the support of labor movement, labor unions, the large labor movements, even for the Vietnam War, into the subsequent period. You can tell this story about every social movement. Liberalism is the default position that every social movement embraces in one form or another, except in these special moments. So it's not surprising that feminism took that, the most hegemonic current of feminism became liberalism. And the other currents didn't disappear, but became small, became marginal, failed to win any visibility in the media and so on and so forth. Now, I think actually today, we are living in a different situation. I think this is a moment of general crisis, of the crisis not just of care, but of nature, of race and expropriation, of democracy and of ecology. So I think that this is one of those moments where we could see, and to a certain extent have seen, a kind of, let's call it an unraveling of bourgeois liberal hegemony. And so we have an opening now for left alternatives, but also for very bad right-wing alternatives. A hegemonic crisis, an unraveling of bourgeois liberal hegemony, is an opportunity for the best and the worst, right, to come out. And that's why we have seen, to go back to what we were talking about before, the Sanders / Trump phenomenon, the on both sides, something new, anti-neoliberal, anti-liberal alternatives of left and right. I am seeing much more left-wing feminist thinking and activism today. I think it's a new ball game, and in which I see exciting left-wing feminist intellectual work, the reemergence of what is of Marxist feminism today under the new label social reproduction theory. Mm-hmm. And then when you go to other parts of the world, I've been paying a lot of attention to Latin America now. The feminist movement in Argentina and Brazil is immensely powerful, radical, and very left and very anti-capitalist. We saw for a while in Spain and Italy that feminism, what I and my co-authors had called feminism for the 99%, which is the anti-liberal feminism, we saw that become the face of opposition to austerity, the defense of social reproduction against debt, austerity, the IMF, and so on and so forth. So this is there are opportunities here. And I would say that social reproduction, which is, again, that fancy word for care work, that's become a center of conflict, especially in places where manufacturing has declined and the historically powerful unions in manufacturing have been weakened. Where is the front line of struggle? Nurses strikes, teachers strike. This is social reproduction. And housing activism and urban environmental activism, and all this is all about care and social reproduction. So I think that I'm, despite the fact that I said before, the right has at the political level, at least for now, edged out the left-wing alternatives that emerged, which included Podemos in Spain, Syriza in Greece. Well, we still now have the new Lula government back in Brazil and so on. Sanders in the U.S. These movements show me that there are left-wing opportunities to be seized. And I do not accept that it's game over here. I do.